The Hobbit, Part 3, by J.R.R. Tolkien.
They walked in single file. The entrance to Mirkwood was like an arch leading into a gloomy tunnel made by two great trees that leaned together, too old and strangled with ivy and hung with lichen to bear more than a few blackened leaves. The path itself was narrow and wound in and out among the trunks. Soon the light at the gate was like a little bright hole far behind, and the quiet was so deep that their feet seemed to thump along while all the trees leaned over them and listened. Occasionally, a slender beam of sun that had the luck to slip in through some opening in the leaves far above, and still more luck in not being caught in the tangled boughs and matted twigs beneath, stabbed down thin and bright before them. Bilbo's sharp, inquisitive eyes caught glimpses of black squirrels whisking off the path and scuttling behind tree trunks. There were queer noises, too. Grunts, scufflings, and hurryings in the undergrowth, and among the leaves that lay piled endlessly thick in places on the forest floor. But what made the noises, he could not see. The nights were even worse. It was so black that you really could see nothing. Almost nothing. They could see eyes. They slept all closely huddled together and took it in turns to watch. When it was Bilbo's turn, he would see eyes in the darkness round them. And sometimes they would gleam down from the branches just above him. Horrible, pale, bulbous eyes.
Insect eyes, not animal eyes. Only they're much too big.
They tried lighting watchfires at night, but they soon gave it up. It seemed to bring hundreds and hundreds of eyes all round them. Worse still, it brought thousands of dark gray and black moths, some nearly as big as your hand, flapping and whirring round their ears. So they gave up fires and sat at night and dozed in the enormous, uncanny darkness. All this went on for what seemed to the hobbit ages upon ages, and he was always hungry and thirsty. Then one day they found their path blocked by a running water.
This must be the river Bjorn spoke of.
The river of forgetfulness.
Look at this. There's been a bridge across, but it's rotted and fallen.
There's a boat against the far bank. Now, why couldn't it have been this side?
How far away do you think it is?
Not at all far. I shouldn't think above 12 yards.
12 yards? I should have thought it was 30 at least. But my eyes don't see as well as they did 100 years ago. Still, 12 yards is as good as a mile.
We can't jump it, and we certainly don't want to try to swim it after what Bjorn told us.
Can any of you throw a rope?
Oh, what's the good of that? The boat's sure to be tied up, even if we could hook it, which I doubt.
I don't believe it's tied, though of course I can't be sure in this light.
Dory's the strongest, but Feely's the youngest, and he has the best sight. Come here, Feely. Yeah. See if you can see the boat Mr. Baggins is talking about.
I think I can make it out.
Well, bring up one of the ropes and fasten the packing hook to the end. Now you guide the throw, Mr. Baggins.
All right, all right. Now, here it goes.
That's it. Straight over there. Not far enough.
No.
A couple of feet, you would have dropped it onto the boat. Now try again. I don't suppose the magic is strong enough to hurt you if you just touch a bit of wet rope.
I hope not. Well, here goes again.
Steady. You've thrown it right into the wood on the other side. Draw it back gently. Carefully. It's lying on the boat. Let's hope the hook will catch.
I think you caught. Now, help me pull.
Come on up. There Mr. Balin, good. Well, it was tied after all. That was a good pull, my lads.
And a good job that our rope was the stronger.
Who'll cross first?
I shall. And you'll come with me, and Thiele and Balin. That's as many as the boat will hold at a time. After that, Keeley and Owen and Glowen and Dory. The next Ori and Nori, Biffer and Bofer. And last, Dwalin and Bomber.
I'm always last, and I don't like it. It's somebody else's turn today.
Don't start grumbling against orders or something bad will happen to you. Here's the last of our party now.
I don't like this, being last all the time.
Careful, Bomber, or you'll swamp the boat.
I won't.
Bomber's fallen in. He'll drown.
Quick, don't let him.
Throw him the rope.
Hook it in the water.
Good. He's got it. Now, pull. There. That's it. Pull him out. There we are.
Pull him out. Is he dead? No. He's asleep.
And smiling.
It's just the work of the enchanted stream. Well, we'll just have to carry him.
Oh, no.
Bomber? Why, he's as heavy as any two of us.
We can't leave him here. Four will carry him. The others will share the supplies.
Oh, no.
Yes.
They were a gloomy party that started again along the dark path beyond the enchanted stream. For days they struggled, burdened with the heavy body of Bombur, who smiled in his sleep as if he no longer cared for all the troubles that vexed them.
Is there no end to this accursed forest? Let's rest here for a time.
Look, Bomber's beginning to move.
Oh, where are we? What's become of Mr. Baggins' house? We were just having a splendid party.
We're a long way from Bag End, my friend, though I wish we were there.
You fell into the stream 4 days back and have been sleeping ever since.
What stream? Where are we?
The enchanted stream that's made you forget everything that happened since we started on our quest.
Well, if I could have something to eat, perhaps my memory would return. Oh, I'm starved.
I wish there was something to eat, but the provisions are gone. Even the water.
Oh, why ever did I wake up? I was having such beautiful dreams. I dreamed I was walking in a forest like this one, only lit with torches on the trees. And there was a great feast going on forever. A woodland king was there with a crown of leaves, and there was merry singing. Oh, I couldn't count or describe the things they were to eat and drink.
You needn't try. In fact, if you can't talk about something else, you'd better be silent.
Oh.
We're quite annoyed with you as it is. Now take your share of the supplies, such as they are, and let's get started before we all starve to death.
Go ahead. I'm just going to lie here and sleep and dream of food if I can't get it any other way. Oh, I hope I never wake up again.
What was that? I thought I saw a twinkle of light in the forest.
A light? Where?
I see it too. Off to the left of the path.
Yes. Torches and fires are burning under the trees a good way off.
It looks as if my dreams are coming true. Come on.
Wait. A feast would be no good if we never got back alive from it.
But without a feast, we shan't remain alive much longer anyway.
All right. I remember only too well the warnings of the wizard and of Bjorn about leaving the path, but we must do something. Now, all stay together and keep a sharp eye out.
Look, it is a
beast.
As the hungry traveler scrambled forward into the circle of light with the one idea of begging for some food, all the lights went out as if by magic. They were lost in a completely lightless dark, and they could not even find one another. Not for a long time, at any rate.
Have we found everyone now? Now stay close. Let's take a count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Is that you, Mr. Baggins?
Yes, I think so.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Only 13?
And you're 14.
I'm 14. Yes, quite right. So, we're all here. We'll just have to wait until morning to find the path.
Look, the lights are coming out again over there.
No rushing forward this time. I shall send Mr. Baggins alone first to talk to them. They won't be frightened of him. Remember, no one is to stir from hiding till I say.
When they got to the edge of the circle of light, they pushed Bilbo suddenly into the full blaze of the fire and torches. Out went all the lights again, and complete darkness fell. Bilbo found himself running round and round and calling and calling.
Balin, Dory, Nori, Thorin, Oakenshield. Over here!
But the cries of the others got steadily farther and fainter. And though after a while it seemed to him they changed to yells and cries for help in the far distance, all noise at last died right away, and he was left alone in complete silence and darkness. So he sat himself down with his back to a tree, and not for the last time fell to thinking of his far distant hobbit hole with its beautiful pantries. He was deep in thoughts of bacon and eggs and toast and butter when he felt something touch him. Something like a strong, sticky string was against his left hand. And when he tried to move, he found that his legs were already wrapped in the same stuff, so that when he got up, he fell over.
What in the deuce? Let go of me! Get away!
It was a great spider who had been busy tying him up. He could only see the thing's eyes, but he could feel its hairy legs as it struggled to wind its abominable threads round and round him. Then he remembered his sword and drew it out. The spider jumped back, and Bilbo had time to cut its legs loose. After that, it was his turn to attack. He struck with his sword right in the eyes. The great spider went mad and leaped and danced and flung out its legs in horrible jerks. The spider lay dead beside him, and his sword blade was stained black. Somehow the killing of the giant spider, all alone by himself in the dark, without the help of the wizard or the dwarves or of anyone else, made a great difference to Mr. Baggins. He felt a different person, and much fiercer and bolder in spite of his empty stomach.
Sword, I will give you a name. I shall call you Sting. Now we had better go to the aid of the dwarves. But first, I'll just slip on the ring in the event we meet any more spiders.
So, with sword in hand, Bilbo picked his way stealthily in the direction from which the cries for help had come. At last he came upon a group of loathsome spiders who were speaking one to another. They were talking about the dwarves.
It was a sharp struggle, but worth it. What nasty thick skins they have.
But I'll wager there's good juice inside.
They make fine eating when they've hung a bit.
Don't hang them too long. They're not as fat as they might be.
Kill them, I say. Kill them now and hang them dead for a while.
No, I saw one struggling just now. I show you. See this fattest one here. Whoa.
No, it's the dwarves hanging in a row from that branch. That's poor old Bumber, I'll bet.
The giant spider nipped hard at the nose that stuck out between the threads. Bumber yelled, and a toe shot up and kicked the spider straight and hard. There was a noise like the kicking of a flabby football, and the enraged spider fell off the branch, only catching itself with its own thread just in time.
You're right. He's alive and kicking.
I do put an end to that.
The angry spider climbed back onto the branch. Bilbo saw that he must do something. He was a pretty fair shot with a stone, and finding several lying nearby, he found some nice, smooth, egg-shaped ones. Just as the spider reached Bombor, Bilbo threw. The stone struck the spider, plunk on the head, and it dropped senseless off the tree, flopped to the ground with all its legs curled up. The next stone went whizzing through a big web, snapping its cords and taking off the spider sitting in the middle of it. Whack! Dead! They couldn't see Bilbo, but they could make a good guess at the direction from which the stones were coming. As quick as lightning, they came running and swinging towards the hobbit, flinging out their long threads in all directions till the air seemed full of waving snares. Bilbo slipped away to a different place and began throwing more stones and shouting.
Old fat spider spinning in a tree. Old fat spider can see me. Attacup, won't you stop? Stop your spinning and look for me. Old Tom Noddy, all big body. Old Tom Noddy can't find me. Attacup, down you drop. You'll never catch me up your tree.
Practically all the spiders in the place came after him. They were frightfully angry. Quite apart from the stones, no spider has ever liked being called Attacup, and Tom Noddy, of course, is insulting to anybody. When he had drawn the spiders farther and farther away from the dwarves, he yelled again.
Lazy love and crazy calm are weaving webs to wind me. I'm far more sweet than other meat, but still they cannot find me. Here am I, naughty little fly. You are fat and lazy. You cannot trap me, though you try, in your cobwebs crazy.
Again he dashed off with the spiders after him. Then, quieter than a mouse, he stole back to free the dwarves. He quickly scrambled up one of the spider ropes hanging from the tree, only to meet an old, slow, wicked, fat-bodied spider who had remained behind to guard the prisoners and had been pinching them to see which was the juiciest to eat. Before the spider knew what was happening, it felt the hobbit sting and rolled off the branch dead. Then Bilbo began to cut away the threads wound round the first bundle.
Most likely Feely. There. Well, it is Feely. You look like one of those funny toys bobbing on a wire.
Boy, I don't feel at all well, Mr. Baggins.
I should think not, what with the spider poison and hanging half the night in this tree. Now give me a hand with the others. The spiders will be back in a minute.
All right.
Between them, they started to haul up first one dwarf and then another and slash them free. There were still five dwarves hanging at the end of the branch when the spiders began to come back, more full of rage than ever. Bilbo had taken off his ring when he rescued Feely, so now they all began to splutter and hiss.
Now we... Nasty little creature!
Quillage! you and leave your bones and skin hanging on a tree. Yes, we will.
Come on.
Cut the others free while I keep the spiders off. Come down. Don't stay up there and be netted. They're swarming up all the neighboring trees.
With hundreds of angry spiders goggling at them all round and about and above, it looked pretty hopeless. But some of the dwarves had knives, and some had sticks, and all of them could get at stones, and Bilbo had his elvish dagger. Again and again the spiders were beaten off, and many of them were killed.
There are too many, and we're too weak. Listen, I'm going to disappear. I'll draw the spiders off if I can and make in the opposite direction. Now go!
Soon Bilbo shouted from the trees on the right. That upset the spiders greatly. They stopped advancing and went off in the direction of the voice. But the dwarves were sick and weary, and they could not go much better than a hobble and a wobble. Soon the creatures were overtaking them, and already some spiders were in the trees above them and throwing down their long, clinging threads. Then suddenly Bilbo appeared and charged into the astonished spiders from the side.
Go on! Go on! I'll do the stinging!
He darted backwards and forwards, slashing at spider threads, hacking at their legs, and stabbing at their fat bodies if they came too near. And just when Bilbo felt that he could not lift his hand for a single stroke more, the spiders suddenly gave it up and followed them no more, but went back disappointed to their dark colony. When the hobbit joined the dwarves, they all lay for some time puffing and panting. But very soon they began to ask questions, and Bilbo had to explain the whole vanishing business carefully, from the Gollum story, riddles and all, to the present. The dwarves had changed their opinion of Mr. Baggins very much, and had begun to have a great respect for him, as Gandalf had said they would. Finally, just as they were all falling asleep, Dwalin opened an eye and looked round at them.
Where's Thorin?
Thorin is gone!
It was a terrible shock. Of course, there were only 13 of them, 12 dwarves and the hobbit. Where indeed was Thorin? They wondered what evil fate had befallen him, magic or dark monsters, and shuddered as they lay lost in the forest. There they dropped off, one by one, into uncomfortable sleep full of horrible dreams.